Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. In this podcast, I got some good stuff to talk about. I'm going to start out talking about track stands and why track stands are the most underrated skill in mountain biking, probably the most important skill that the least amount of riders really have dialed in. I got a rider Q&A as well. This one's from a rider asking about if flat pedals are really bad for your knees, like what is the role of float in clipless pedals? And because flat pedals don't have float, aren't they bad for your knee? Because you need float in clipless pedals for your knees. And then I've got a gear review as well. And we're going to talk about the sense of motion shoes. Like I actually do not ride 510s anymore. I have not ridden them for several years. There's a few reasons for that, but one of them is because I found something that I actually like better and find performs better and does better for me, for especially for trail riding, than 510 shoes, and that's the sense of motion shoes. And so before we begin, though, got a couple things I wanted to tell you about. First, with Pedaling Innovations, my company that makes the Catalyst pedal, we have our first shipment of XL pedals in. I did a small run of these a while back, and the XL pedals were inspired by a buddy of mine who is a big dude, and you know, he's got like a size 14 foot, and I was watching him on the standard Catalyst pedals, and I could see he was still getting some foot wrap around. They just weren't big enough to support his foot. And so optimally like I would like. And so I borrowed his shoe and used it as the model for the pedal. And so I've had people test it, and the feedback is pretty consistent. If you have a size 13 or larger shoe, then this XL pedal will make a big difference, even over and above the standard Catalyst pedal. If you don't have at least a size 13, then the XL is going to be too big. There's definitely a sweet spot for your foot. And so size 12 and under, the regular Catalyst is fine, but I knew there are a lot of big-footed riders out there. And really, if you think about it, this is the first pedal that is made specifically with you guys in mind, people who have bigger feet, bigger riders. And again, I keep saying bigger guys. I'm sure there's a few girls out there that got some big feet as well. But primarily, a lot of the people buying these and looking for them are guys. But that is because, again, like I said, these are the only pedals in the world that have been made specifically for larger riders with their physical needs in mind and how to optimally support their foot. And so, really happy to bring that to the market and help out some riders have even more fun on the trail. And you know, again, that's kind of the whole point of the Catalyst pedal, is finding the best support for your foot to allow you to move and perform your best on the bike. And so again, you can find out more about those at pedalinginnovations.com. And then be sure to check out bikejames.com as always. You know, lots of great info posted there, lots of free workouts and stuff you can sign up for. And also wanted to let everyone know that I do have a distance coaching program. It's not something that I advertise or promote a lot, but for riders, especially if you're into this whole like riding for a lifetime concept, this thing I've been talking about a lot lately, because again, like that's the thing is, and this is the thing I've struggled with being a coach and being a trainer, is after a while you start to realize it's not the workouts that make the difference, right? Like the workouts are really important, but if you really want to make a difference, it's a lifestyle. And so if it, like the riding for a lifetime, like it's a lifestyle. It's not just a workout program. And so people who are looking for help with incorporating this lifestyle into their life, you know, beyond just working out, getting into mindset, getting into, sleep and breathing and nutrition and just mindset habits and just the things that really all together create this synergistic effect that has just such a powerful effect to create change and just keep people feeling and performing their best, as opposed to just buying a workout program. And that's great, right? Do the workout programs, but it's you know, if you're gonna do the workout program but not get enough sleep and eat like crap and have a bad mindset, you know, how much are you really gonna get accomplished? And so again, that's where the distance coaching program comes in, is for riders who are looking for that extra kind of personal touch with their program, and also just the overall lifestyle approach allows me the chance to work with you on a more personal level. So anyways, if you're interested in that, you can find out more. Just send me an email, james@bikejames.com, letting me know you're interested in the distance coaching program, and I can give you some more info. So anyways, on to our first subject here. And so this one is, I'm going to talk about track stands. And track stands are kind of like isometrics in the skills training world. And if you have been, you know, following me, then you know that I'm a real big fan of isometric training. I think that they have lots of advantages and benefits for us as riders. But unfortunately, they're not very sexy. They don't look super exciting. And so they don't get a lot of attention, which is unfortunate. And I feel the same thing happens with track stands. Like, they're literally isometric. You're not isometric because you are having to move some, but you're staying one place, right? Track stands are where your bike's not moving, but you're balancing on your bike. So that is the track stand. And it is by far the most underrated skill in mountain biking. It absolutely blows my mind how few riders are, a lot of riders can't track stand at all. Like, that is really, when I explain why this is important, you'll understand like why I'm so baffled by it, because it's a safety and performance issue, and it's very important for you to have as a core fundamental skill. And a lot of people can't do it. You know, some people that can do it, you know, they're all right, they're competent, but like, you know, finding a rider who is just really good at track stands, and not just regular track stands, but also switch foot track stands with you know, either foot forward, which I'll get to here more in a second. But, you know, it's very rare to find a rider who's really great with track stands. And, you know, at least compared to how many riders you find who can't do a track stand at all. And one of the reasons is it's not a sexy skill, right? Like, who wants... like, you want to learn how to do jumps and drops and corners and manuals and bunny hops and, you know, all these other things that just, you know, look and so much more exciting than going nowhere, just balancing on your bike, going nowhere. Like, what is the point of that? Like, that's about as far from riding your bike as you can get, right? On the trail, you're moving and you're dynamic and you're doing all these things. Like, what is the value of a track stand? And so, and you'll even hear this reinforced from the skills training community. You'll actually hear coaches say that the track stand is not like a core fundamental skill. And you know, if you only have so much time to practice your skills, then the track stand is not a high priority item. Like, maybe you'll work on it if you have extra time, but you need to be working on these other skills before you worry about your track stand. And so it's a confusing message that riders get, as far as like, you know, why do they want to do it and is it important and who the hell cares about it, right? If you happen to know how to do it, great. If not, like, what's the big deal? Well, here is the problem. At its core, track stands are the skill of balancing without any momentum. Momentum helps you balance your bike. This is why you can ghost ride a bike, right? Like, you can get it up to speed and then jump off the back of it, and it will continue to go straight for a while because of momentum. It has absolutely no input from you. There's no one balancing that bike. The bike is balancing itself through momentum. And then as it loses momentum, the balance becomes less and the bike starts to wobble and then eventually falls over. And that is because it lost the momentum, and that momentum was no longer able to help the bike balance by itself. The same thing happens with you on it, when a rider is on it. And so as long as you're moving and moving at a certain speed, then the bike is balancing itself. and you don't have to balance the bike as much. But the slower you go, the less momentum you have, the more that you have to rely on your own balance skills to keep the bike balanced. And so when you're not moving at all, when you're track standing, that is 100% you. There's no momentum to help you balance. And so it is 100% how good can you balance on your bike. And so realistically, if you can't do a track stand, you can't balance on your bike. You're always having to rely on momentum to help you balance your bike in some way. So you don't really own the balance on your bike. It's more the momentum, and you're assisting the momentum than you owning it. And so that is one of the reasons it's important to be able to do a track stand, because you need to own your slow speed balance. Okay, the slower you're going, the more you need that slow speed balance. Now, why is this important? Well, there are certain skills that this is the fundamental core skill for you to be able to do this. Switchbacks, for example, especially coming, really down or up, right? Like switchbacks, what makes switchbacks so tricky is that you can't carry momentum through them. Now, people will try and come up with tricks and, oh, here's the line to carry momentum. You know, it really, besides it being faster, it's really just helping people get over, not have to deal with the essential core problem, which is they don't have their own slow speed balance dialed in. And so when you're doing a switchback, like I said, the way you're not able to carry your momentum. And so you have to either go very slow, or in some switchbacks, you have to actually stop, pause for a second as you change your weight and momentum in a different direction, and then have the bike start following you. And so if you don't have that slow speed balance, then that's the core fundamental skill. If you don't have that, then you're not going to be able to ride switchbacks confidently. I guarantee you that if you're listening to this and you struggle with switchbacks, that you also are not great at track stands. I know there's going to be a few outliers there, but I'd be willing to bet money that out of 100 people, like 90 to 95 of them, like, you're going to find that correlation with, like, yeah, if they struggle with switchbacks, that they also struggle with track stands. And it's because if they don't have the fundamental skill of the slow speed balance to be able to do a good switchback, good switchback technique in the first place. And so, you have all of these different, steps and theories and ways to ride switchbacks, when if all you learn how to do is do a track stand, a lot of this stuff would become self-evident, because you wouldn't be looking for ways to try to carry momentum and use momentum. You would be actually using your own slow speed balance to get you through that. So switchbacks are one. Technical climbs, where you're not able to just carry your momentum up it, where you're going to have to maneuver up and over a ledge or around, through a rock or something like that. Rock gardens as well, the technical sections that don't allow you to carry that momentum. All of these things require this slow speed balance skill. And all of these things have an inherent danger component to them as well. I mean, you trying to ride a switchback, especially on something that's got some exposure or something like that, without having slow speed balance is dangerous, right? Like trying to do technical climb and just rely on momentum. Like, this is what happens a lot of times. Like, you end up using momentum and luck instead of skill to get through things, especially if you don't have this slow speed balance, because you're always trying to avoid situations that put you in this slow speed balance, demand. And so you're always using momentum. But momentum, a lot of times, especially if you're trying to get through anything like a switchback, a technical climb, a rock garden, there's a degree of luck. You're hoping that the momentum bounces you the right way. Okay, and so your ability to slow down and use skill is going to make it less luck and more, your skill. Now, again, like, this is why, bike technology puts the odds in your favor with stuff. So people can get away with bouncing through things on a big wheel bike with lots of suspension, especially if you throw a motor on it for an e-bike. Like, you can get away with a lot of, you know, stuff because the technology puts that, you know, puts the odds in your favor. But at the end of the day, you're still just relying on momentum and luck as opposed to like actual skill and using that slow speed balance as a skill to help you get through those things, you know, yourself. And so the thing with the track stands as well is they're so easy to improve, right? It's not like it takes, you know, years to figure out how to get good at track stands. I mean, if you committed to practicing your track stands, and so you know, just spent like 5 minutes a day, like 5 days a week, you would just within a month, your skill level would be just, you know, so much better than where it is now. Okay. So it doesn't take a lot of time and effort to do. It's also really easy to practice on the trail, right? Like if you're having to pause and wait for somebody, you can track stand. This is something that you can do while waiting for people to get ready. You know, you're ready a little early, so you can practice track stands while they're getting ready, you know, at the trailhead. And so this is also one of the best uses of your off-trail training time as well. Like I would, you know, there's limited value in a lot, you know, in some drills, you know, because all you're doing is learning how to get better at the drills. So you got to be careful. I've talked about this before, like things, you know, drilling for muscle memory versus drilling for practicing principles, and you know why muscle memory is just kind of that's not what you want to be drilling for. And so, but track stands are one of those things that you do kind of want to be drilling, like you're getting the feel and you're getting the muscle memory for it, which is good. And so it is like, if you have dedicated time that you're already spending to doing some skills training, adding 5 minutes of track stands is easy, and it's going to make a huge impact on your riding. And then finally, make sure that you work on having both feet forward. You want to work on regular foot and switch foot. And this will work. This will help out a lot the situations. You know, one, you don't want to be really heavily right footed or left footed. You know, we're always going to have a favorite foot forward. But I strongly believe that you need to work really hard on riding switch foot and getting really good at switch foot riding. And you should be able to get to like 80 to 90% as proficient with either foot forward, with your other foot forward, as you are with your preferred foot forward. And so there's just all sorts of advantages for that, and which is, you know, kind of a little bit different subject. But one of the things that will help you feel more comfortable with your switch foot riding is working on your switch foot track stance, because you will be working. One of the reasons that switch foot riding feels weird is because when your feet are in that configuration, your balance is even worse, right? That's why when you go to a switch foot track stand, all of a sudden you can't balance at all. Like you go from like barely being able to do it to not being able to do it at all. Like your balance is worse with your, you know, less favorite foot forward, with that other foot forward. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons when you're on the trail, you go to switch foot and it's like your brain is instinctively telling you to get out of here. Like, this is not good, because it recognizes the massive loss of balance that you have with your feet switched like that. And so if you spend time working on your switch foot track stands and just building that basic fundamental slow speed balance with either foot forward, and you get strong with that weaker foot, then it will have an impact on the trail. When you switch your feet and go to that switch foot, it will feel better, because you will have better balance in that foot position. So it'll help in a lot of different ways. So anyways, hopefully I've convinced you to value track stands and see why they're important to be able to do, and for you to work on, and for us to continue to spread the message to new riders that you do need to be able to do track stands, and you should work on them, and here's how to do it. And so I think we can make an impact on the overall level of riding that you see out there if we're able to do that, because this is one of these core fundamental skills that so many riders are missing. And so it definitely affects the overall level of riding that you're going to see, and we can do better with a better approach. So there you go. Work on your track stands. Next up is a writer Q&A, and I had a writer, he wrote, and he had a question. He's had knee surgery, and he was worried about knee pain. And so he was wanting to start using flat pedals, but he was worried that they would actually be worse for his knees. And the reason is because, you know, on clipless pedals, you have float. And float is that little bit of free play that you have where you can twist your foot a little bit and it'll move, but you don't actually unclip. And so you need that on clipless pedals. If your float is too tight or you don't have float, it'll hurt your knees and it's bad for your knees. And so the thinking is well, since you don't have any float on flat pedals, that flat pedals are actually harder on your knees than a well set up pair of clipless pedals. And again, this is a common thought process. I've gotten this question a lot of times before, which is one of the reasons I wanted to address it here. But the short answer is that float is unnecessary. You don't need float. You need float on clipless pedals, but that doesn't mean that your foot needs float. And that flat pedals provide a more natural platform and more natural foot function than clipless pedals ever can. And so they're actually better for your knees in every way than clipless pedals. And so here's the reason. I'll explain why. And our body, our legs, our feet and legs don't create energy in a straight line. So when you're pressing into the ground or your pedals or whatever, you know, your foot and is driving into, the energy is not straight up and down. There are spirals going on. Your femur is rotating in the hip. There's a little bit of rotation at the knee joint. And then your foot is actually rotating and screwing into whatever you're pressing into. So this rotation is a natural and more efficient way to create energy. It's why your body uses, you know, spirals and diagonals instead of straight lines to create movement and create energy. It's a more efficient way to do it. And so there's this misunderstanding where we think that we want to have our legs just like pistons, right? Like the cycling industry has done a really good job of disconnecting us from our humanness when we get on a bike, right? Like we're no longer humans. When we get on a bike, we are this machine that we're going to mold to power our bikes. And that is just such a disrespectful way to look at the wonderful, amazing organism that is the human body and how to unleash its potential on the bike. But again, one of the side effects of this mindset of, you know, creating a machine to drive the bike is that a machine wants to drive straight up and down, right? Like you want straight up and down, like that having the energy going off center is going to be less efficient. Again, that's true if you're talking about something that's designed to create energy in a straight line. You definitely don't want wobbles from side to side. That is inefficient. That's not true if you're talking about something that's designed to create energy as a spiral. Okay, so for example, a nail is designed to be driven in and have energy transfer, like, you know, make use of the hammer's energy in a straight line. You just drive it straight in. Okay, a screw makes use of the spiral and you screw it into the wood. A screw is tighter than a nail. And one of the reasons is because of the energy and the forces created by the screwing motion. But if you have something that's designed like a nail, it's for this energy to be straight up and down, and that you're hitting it and you're hitting it off center, and the energy is going from side to side a little bit, well, you're going to bend the nail. Okay, so yes, like that's, you're right. But if you have something that's designed to make use of this screwing motion, and you try to take a hammer and nail it in, it's not going to work. All right, and that's basically what's happening with our legs, with the way the bike industry looks at how we create energy. And so they're taking a hammer to a screw and telling you to create energy without making use of this rotational movement. All right. And so this rotational movement that your foot is making is in relation to the ground or what your foot is on. All right. It's rotating in relation to that. Now, what you don't want is to strap your foot to the ground, or so it can't move in relation to the ground. And that's what happens when you strap your foot to clipless pedals, and that it's too tight, or you know, you had toe cages where you would strap your feet on and do it super tight. And this is one of the reasons they put float in clipless pedals, is because people were blowing their knees out using toe cages because they were strapping the foot down so tight that there was no movement in the foot, and so that rotation was getting hung up in the knees, and it wasn't able, that energy wasn't able to transfer down to the force, and that energy was tearing the knees up. And so that's why they designed float into clipless pedals, was to compensate for this known problem of what happens when you strap your foot and make it too tight, that and strap it down too tightly to the pedal. And so that's why, you know, again, if your float is set too tight, that it can you know, cause problems. Because if you rotate your foot on clipless pedals, you unclip. And so they have to create this free space where your foot can move in relation to the pedal, right? The pedal's not moving, but your foot is moving, but it doesn't unclip. And so that's what float is. It's a way to compensate for that unnatural interface that's created by the clipless pedal, right? So if you just strapped it straight on and your foot could not move in relation to the pedal at all, then it would blow your knees up, right? So you have to have some little bit of play. And so again, when you're on flats, you know, or I guess, you know, really starting when you're on the ground, like the ground isn't moving, but your foot is moving, all right? So again, your foot is able to move and create this rotational energy in relation to the ground. And that's what happens on flat pedals as well. The flat pedal is staying there. You're not attached to it. Your foot is just pressing into it and creating pressure. There's no attachment there. And so that allows your foot to move in relation to the pedal. And so it, you know, again, it's not, you look down and the foot itself isn't twisting, but the foot inside the foot is moving. Like the bones and the structure of the foot is creating this rotational energy as you're pressing into the pedal. And so this is one of the reasons actually, like, why, you know, the catalyst pedal, because it secures your heel. So it makes that rotation, it locks your foot in even more. So it takes even more advantage of that rotational energy. So, because any rotational movement out of your foot is wasted energy, right? So like float is wasted energy. From an engineering standpoint, it's a nightmare. You're wasting energy. That's rotational energy that should be going into driving the pedal down, and it's being wasted because you have this free-floating thing going. If you're on flats that you can't get pressure on the back end of the arch under the heel, and your heel is moving at all, well, again, you're wasting some of this rotational energy. It's floating in space, and you're losing some of it. So what you want is your foot securely attached to a platform, you know, or pressing into. You don't want it attached to it. You want it pressing into it. So the attachment is created through pressure, not through an artificial attachment point, like, you know, clipping your foot in or using a toe strap or something like that. So, you know, that's the difference there. So again, like your foot, the way that it is designed to function, it is not designed to function by being attached to something and then trying to create energy that way, right? So the flat pedal is a more natural interface for your foot. It allows more natural foot motion with that rotation. This is one of the reasons that, again, like the reality is that people who have knee problems on clipless pedals most of the time see an improvement when they switch to flats. And again, that's been one of the biggest things, bits of feedback from the catalyst pedal we've gotten as well, is that people's knee pain actually just goes away. Because once you let your foot act the way that it's intended to and act naturally, and that is make use of this rotational energy, then all of a sudden the stress is gone off of the knee. So the flat pedal allows you to use this rotational energy better than a clipless pedal. Because on clipless pedals, you're trying to minimize how much your feet are moving in that float. So you're artificially trying to create this, this linear energy creation through your foot. So it's like you're trying to take a screw and hammer it down, as opposed to making full use of the screwing motion. And so, you know, you can, you know, so that's what float is. Float, your foot doesn't need or want float. You know, you don't find float in any other sport or situation, right? What other sport or situation makes use of float, right? Like, where else do you want your foot attached but not actually, you know, secured? And you don't, right? And so that is, it's an unnatural thing to make up for the unnatural interface that clipless pedals create. So switching to flats, you don't need to worry about float. It is not a problem. In fact, you don't want float. Float is you trying to make the best of a bad situation. And again, like this is, float is a loss of rotational energy, and it's just, it teaches actually bad movement habits from just a movement standpoint. And so, again, I never want you to move the way that clipless pedals force you to move in any other situation but on the bike. And I don't want you to move that way, right? Again, this disconnect that the cycling industry has created between us and our humanness when we get on the bike. Like, we're not human anymore. We are this machine, and whatever they tell us is how we are supposed to operate is how we will operate. And it's like, wait a minute. What if the body doesn't work that way? What if that's not how it optimally functions? And, you know, don't we want to first look at that, and then how do we apply this? So, again, if you're looking at how the foot and the leg create energy, a clipless pedal would be the last way that you would want to try and transfer that energy into a pedal, all right, or into a platform, which is what a clipless pedal is. It is a type of platform. And so, anyways, you don't need float. You don't want float. And really, the reason that people want to attach their foot to the pedal in the first place, which is a little bit of a side note, is because small pedals create unstable energy going into the platform, which causes the platform to start to rotate forward. This is why your toes point down. So you're literally creating unstable energy into a rotating platform, which is trying to roll your foot off of the pedal. And one solution is to attach your foot to the pedal. Another solution is to stabilize the energy going into the pedal. And again, that's what the Catalyst pedal does, is it actually stabilizes the energy by using two pressure points, the ball of the foot and the heel, to drive into this rotating platform. And again, these two pressure points at either end stabilize the energy, so you don't have this rotation, you don't have your foot trying to roll off the pedal, which means you don't feel like you need to attach your foot to the pedal, which means that you don't need clipless pedals in the first place. All right, so once you really peel the onion back and you realize, like, wait a minute, that's what they're doing? Like, we have this unstable energy going into a pedal, and instead of fixing the unstable energy, we're just strapping our foot to it? Like, that's stupid. It's ridiculous. So anyways, it makes no sense. But anyway, side rant there. So, you know, get off those things. Catalyst pedals, pedalinginnovations.com. Again, this is why I created these things. Like, when you look at how the human body moves and how the foot moves and functions best, like, you need those two pressure points. You need pressure through the ball of the foot and the heel, and be able to apply, you know, move them back and forth as needed, and for your foot and your body and your legs to optimally function. And so without that support, your body is just flailing and trying to get through as best it can. And so, you know, don't make that bad situation even worse by, you know, using clipless pedals, which is just a terrible, terrible thing to do to your body. So anyways, all right, enough of that. On to our gear review. So gear review, we're going to talk about Sense of Motion shoes. And these are the shoes that I have been riding for several years now. And I guess kind of backing up a little bit, like, you know, everybody out there, at one point I have been a 5'10 guy. I mean, I go so far back with 5'10s. I remember they were originally the Intense shoe. I think Intense had gone to them or something, or they had come to Intense or whatever it was. And you had the Intense downhill shoe. And I didn't even know that they were like 5'10 shoes or anything like that, right? So they just had this sticky rubber, and the sticky rubber was amazing. And again, why do you need sticky rubber? Okay, well, if you have unstable energy, again, I was just talking about this, right? So you have a small platform, you have one pressure point through the ball of the foot, this creates unstable energy, the platform starts to rotate forward, and it's trying to roll your foot off the pedal. Well, One way is to attach your foot to the pedal. The other way is to create a lot of friction, as much friction as possible between the pedal and your foot. And so, you know, using a lot of tall pins, this is also where using a concave design, trying to get the ball of your foot to nestle into a little pocket, again, creates more surface area and more friction. And, you know, using sticky rubber shoes created more friction. And so, you know, I'm coming from riding Payless shoes. Again, if you've never ridden, you know, people that have never ridden pre-510, like it's hard to imagine. It's like you didn't even have that option, right? So you're trying to ride around on, you know, Vans, you know, maybe skate shoes. You know, I had these Payless shoes that worked pretty good and they were cheap. You know, I was riding in Hawaii at the time and they were just getting trashed by the red mud. And so, you know, you didn't want to spend a bunch of money on them. But man, those things got wet and it was just, you know, it was no fun, right? It was dangerous. And so trying to find shoes that worked well and could get a little mud or wet on them and not fall apart, you know, just like their performance fall apart. And so then you come across these intense shoes and they've got sticky rubber on them. And it was a godsend. It was just a game changer, just night and day with how much better they were compared to a regular pair of shoes. And so I wore those things. I wore them out. And then I go to buy more and they don't have them anymore. I can't find them. And I thought they were gone. And so I started going back to riding Vans. And then I was looking on, my wife found them on Zappos.com actually, you know. And excuse me. She's like, hey, these are those shoes you used to have. Look, and they're, you know, this company 510 makes them. And I started looking into it and I realized what had happened. You know, oh, 510 makes these shoes. 510 is a climbing company. You know, they have this sticky rubber. And so, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I ordered the 510 shoes and boom, that was them. I remember I ordered two pairs of them because I was like, man, if they stop making these things again, I got to have another pair on hand. These things are so good. I can't ride other shoes. And so I've been a huge 510 fan in the past. And, you know, especially when they were originally just flat pedal shoes, when they did not make clipless pedal shoes, like they really were, you know, one of the driving, you know, cool forces behind the, you know, free ride and you know, some of that, the flat pedal scene. And then, you know, things change and they got sold to Adidas, which, you know, really should give them access to better resources and be able to make better shoes. But, you know, the other thing is I don't know why. I have my theories. I feel like the marketing people at 510 just really misunderstand mountain bikers. And I'm tired of them making shoes that, one, aren't like the highest quality. Like, you know, they tend to fall apart rather quickly. Again, you can find a pair that will last for a while, but overall, I think we've all had that pair that's just like, wait a minute, why is the sole coming off so quickly? You know, but the other thing is that they treat everyone like we're just, you know, 20-something-year-old down, you know, slope-style riders that want to go, you know, kick it at the coffee shop after we're done riding or something, right? Like, it's all just skate shoe upper nonsense. And, you know, on sticky rubber. And there's no real thought put into the shoe. There's no real thought put into, okay, let's make like a shoe that is a foot healthy shoe, right? I think by this point, we know what a foot healthy shoe is, something that conforms to the shape of the foot, something that has a minimalist type sole, you know, not too much pressure, you know, something that allows the foot to move and articulate freely. You know, these are good foot healthy things that you want from a shoe. And even if you're just going to be riding your bike, you still want your foot to function the same way, whether you're on your bike or off the bike. And so having a shoe that fits well, isn't super heavy and hot, isn't, you know, like I said, just like some heavy skate type upper would be great. And they just refuse to recognize that there is a huge segment of the mountain biking market that rides flat pedals and we are just trail riders, right? Like we're not downhill slope style riders. And, you know, you look and you see all the crazy cool shoes and all the tech that goes into clipless pedal shoes. And then you look at mountain bike shoes or flat pedal shoes and it's just like, you know, it's like chimpanzees or, you know, apes banging rocks together compared to like Nobel winning scientists, right? It's like, what is this? Like, why do we have this level of flat pedal shoe compared to this level of clipless pedal shoe for a trail rider, for someone who's just looking for a good lightweight shoe that fits well, breathes well, you know, sheds water quickly. You know, it's not complicated. It's not a complicated list, man. But for some reason, whatever the reason is, 510 and other shoe companies that make flat pedal shoes just seem incapable of producing something that can do this. And so I have stopped riding 510s for a while. I feel like they've lost their soul at some point, really. But I don't find that I need their shoes anymore, especially because I'm riding the catalyst pedal, so I don't need that super sticky rubber that you get with 510s. Again, the reason the 510s are so popular is they give you the most friction. And if your foot's always trying to roll off the pedal because your pedals are too small and you only have one pressure point and you're getting that unstable energy, well, then, yeah, you need that friction. But you fix that, and all of a sudden you open up a whole lot of other options. And so for me, these Sense of Motion shoes, which you can learn more about at SOM. SOM is short for Sense of Motion, right? SOMfootwear.com. They are a small operation that makes shoes in Montrose, Colorado, which is about an hour and a half from where I'm at. So I've actually been to the factory, met Ollie and the gang there, the people that make the shoes. And so it's a cool operation, cool people who really care about their product and the customers as well. And so I really like supporting companies like that. But their shoes are awesome. I love their shoes. They've actually become like my go-to just shoe, overall shoe. And so I love riding with them. They're a foot-healthy shoe. Right, I mentioned this earlier, like they conform to the shape of the foot. They allow the foot to articulate and move. They're very light and breathable. Like they're just, it's amazing. It took some getting used to actually after coming out of my 510 free riders, riding these things, like my feet felt naked. But again, I'm trail riding, right? Like I'm not going to bash my feet and ride. I don't need like a bunch of protection all the time. And you know, if I do, maybe I need to watch where my feet are going. Okay. So, but the point is that they're so light compared to the 510s that they almost feel like you've got nothing on, and they're super breathable. They dry quickly if you get them wet, and they do have sticky rubber, right? So they have a sticky rubber sole. It's just not the stealth rubber. Okay. It's not the super sticky stealth rubber that you get with 510s, but really you don't need that super sticky rubber, especially on, you know, catalyst pedals or a larger flat pedal that allows a better midfoot position, because that's going to create less of this rolling that goes on from the unstable energy. But yeah, like I said, man, overall, they are a great shoe, a great company, you know, good people. But yeah, that's the shoe that I recommend. You know, if somebody's riding catalyst pedals and they're interested in what shoes I wear, those are the ones that I wear. And if you're just interested in a foot healthy shoe, period, then check them out, right? They're a great investment. And like I said, they're my go-to shoe for pretty much everything. I got, you know, a pair for riding. I got a pair for just, you know, kicking around town, you know, pair for hiking. Really, it's the same pair, to be honest with you. It's the one pair that I do all three with. But that's what makes them so freaking awesome, is you can literally just go from one thing to the next, and they clean up super well. I've got the black ones, and so, you know, if they get dirty or whatever, I just got to take a wet rag and wipe them off, and they look really good. So awesome overall shoe. And like I said, I love them as riding shoes as well, and just so much better for my foot. Like I tried to ride a pair of 510 free riders the other day, and it was torture for my poor foot. I had to stop. My foot started cramping because they just fit so poorly. The things were just so heavy. And yeah, they're like, dude, where are our good shoes? What are these things? I was like, I'm sorry. I just wanted to try them out and see if maybe, you know, we were missing something. But, you know, sometimes you gotta try something to realize that, yeah, you don't want to do it anymore. So just like eating McDonald's every once in a while, just to remind you that, like, oh yeah, that makes me feel not so good. anyways, maybe that's just me. So check them out again at SOMfootwear.com. And yeah, get a pair. You won't regret it. So that's going to do it for this podcast. Remember two things before we check out XL pedals, XL catalyst pedals. If you are or you know someone who's got big feet, right, size 13, 14 plus feet, have them check these pedals out. These are the pedals for them at pedalinginnovations.com. And also check out bikejames.com. Sign up for the newsletter. There's all sorts of free stuff you can sign up for there. Podcasts, videos, articles, just it's a whole wealth of information, man. I just love to share stuff with people to help them, you know, understand how to ride better and have more fun and train better and just really do this, not just now, but for a whole lifetime as well. So, which again, if you want to learn more about my distance coaching, you can hit me up at james@bikejames.com. Ask me about that. If you got any questions about this podcast, got any subjects you want to see me cover, anything like that, james@bikejames.com. is where to reach me. I'm always happy to help. So that's going to do it for this podcast, and I will talk to everybody next time.